What's up, Clown Corps and comic fans alike? It's HVK and V's back.
What's up, everybody? I'm back from the West Coast.
V out there doing, I was going to say doing God's work, but you were just working.
Yeah, so, no, it was regular work. God ain't have nothing to do with my occupation.
Yeah.
He got a little bit to do with it. Surprise announcement for everybody here. On the plane back, I actually finished the first draft of my second book.
So, oh, there you go.
Yeah, that's officially done. So, you know, now it's typing it up again, looking through it, deciding that it's trash, writing it all over, and then starting from the beginning, you know. The life of an author.
For those interested, as per usual, we're going to have a link to V's book, Lunar Naturals, in the description of this episode. So definitely give it a shout. I know V's been selling. I'm not gonna make it sound like it's millions of copies, but I think it's been selling pretty well.
I'm above average. I'm at 60 copies sold, and I'll take that. You know what I mean? 40 more, we're at 100. And
hey,
honestly, the numbers for how many people like hit 100 copies are super slim. So, you know, I'm appreciative.
To quote Tolkien himself, every journey starts with the first step. Yeah. So, no, I think that's awesome, dude. So, of course, if you're interested, you want to check it out. We will have a link in the description of this episode. And every episode we do, I always try to make sure I put it in there. Just a little update on my own stuff. I'm like into the first short story for the first compilation I'm doing. I think I'm like 60 pages into it, something like that.
I got to ask for the people out there. You getting close to the end of the first short story, or you still got a bit to go?
I am coming close to it. So I know, just as an aside, from a lot of the stuff I've read, you know, short story style compilation books, they always sometimes feel like the story goes on longer than it should. So I'm not really limiting it to like, this is the page number I'm aiming for each particular story. I'm just kind of writing it. And then whenever it ends, it ends.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
So I am almost done. I'll put it this way. I'm almost done with the second act of the short story. And then I'm going to get to the final act here, in a little bit. And then, you know, I already have things webbed out for the second short story from that little compilation. But anyway, speaking of stories, speaking of authors, I'm going to rip on Alan Moore again, if that's all right with you, V. It's not the first time I've ripped into Alan Moore, because Alan Moore's interesting to me. Not because he's actually a good writer, though. Alan Moore is interesting to me because I have never seen somebody who literally thinks that they're an actual wizard so much, and then claim to be so anarchistic, yet be such a collectivist at the same time. He is like an absolute man of extreme dichotomies. So he's probably autistic. And his writing style reflects that. This is the guy that brings you stuff like The Watchmen and V for Vendetta that people think is very prolific. And the reality is it's not. One of my favorite things about Alan Moore is the fact that when he wrote Watchmen, he wrote Rorschach he wanted Rorschach to come across as the bad guy. Now, keep in mind, in a story about a superhero team, where some of them are murdering their fellow heroes that don't want to go along with their plans to subjugate the world population and mass murder people, that the dude that's trying to stop that, he's the bad guy. So it gives you a really good perspective about Alan Moore's view of the world. He's an elitist.
Talk about failing upwards.
He is the most... If you read The Killing Joke, and you think The Killing Joke is in any way A, a good Batman story, B, prolific, or C, quote-unquote, broke new bounds for the character, you have really low writing standards, I'm sorry to say. Like, Kevin Smith is an example, and that should tell you everything you need to know about what caliber of individual thinks Alan Moore is a good writer. I remember Kevin Smith saying that The Killing Joke was one of the most, like, insanely good Batman stories he's ever read. And I'm like, really, bro? Really?
I mean, in Kevin Smith's defense, he had a heart attack. So any other Batman story he read was going to be good.
Keep in mind, by the time The Killing Joke was written, we'd already gotten... I'm not even going to touch on Frank Miller, because that's the other author we're going to talk about here. I'm not even going to talk about The Dark Knight, Dark Knight Returns, rather. But you already had guys like Neil Adams and Steve Englehart that had already written Batman and brought him back to being like the gritty street-level like pulp detective. And people are talking about Alan Moore like he's like saved the character. And it's like, you people like put paint in your cornflakes in the morning, I guess, because there's no way.
It adds color.
So Alan Moore's Gandalf looking ass. And this is the headline. Mm-hmm. Watchmen creator Alan Moore criticizes Frank Miller's work as, this is my favorite term of 2023, criticizes Frank Miller's work as sub-fascist. Says his I don't even know what that means.
It's not quite fascist enough for me to call it fascist.
It's like, it's not fascist.
So I needed a new word for it.
Exactly. His work isn't fascist, but I find it icky, so it's sub-fascist. It's okay. It's like everything, literally everyone I don't like is a Nazi. Spoiler alert, the Nazis weren't even fascists. I'm not even going to get into that debate, but let's be real here. That's what he's saying. Everyone I don't like is a fascist. And that's what he's doing here. Says his portrayal of Batman as a one-man hero in The Dark Knight Returns was a bit too Birth of a Nation. Wow. Somebody didn't read the book. Now, keep in mind, if Batman... For those who are unfamiliar with The Dark Knight Returns, let's do a Cliff Notes version here. Batman retires, and crime in Gotham goes up, and the U.S. government decides that all superheroes need to register with the government, and, you know, those who don't will be dispensed with. For example, Superman registers with the government, because of course he does.
He does. It's soups.
And... realistically, Superman wouldn't, but for story purposes, of course he does.
Yeah, no, what you say, because he's supposed to be like true American.
Yeah, right. Well, this is where I'm going to get at with the Batman thing here, because people really don't understand these heroes and what they were born out of. But Green Arrow doesn't go with it, and he like, you know, maims Green Arrow ripping his arm
off. Green
Arrow
is the one I would assume would have gone with it.
Green Arrow would go with it before Batman or Superman.
Or anybody. He'd be the first one to be like, yeah, y'all ain't going to put me in jail and take away my money. Here you go.
Green Arrow's a leftist. He hates businesses and he loves the government. That's literally his character. But so Batman comes out of retirement, which garners the attention of the U.S. government. He starts cleaning up Gotham again, because of course he does. And then that's when we have the epic confrontation between him and Superman. Superman representing this American sort of federalized America, for lack of a better term. And then you have Batman. There's actually a really good scene in the book where you have Superman and he's got like his leg up on a rock at Wayne Manor. And he's got like a bald eagle that's like perched on his shoulders and his hands on his hip. It's supposed to be like very 80s America, right? But it also is the underlying connotation of what it represents of like this very federalized, very centralized United States. And then you have Batman, and sitting next to Batman is a dog. It's supposed to be a dog. It basically looks like a wolf. So you have the federalized America and you have like the lone wolf. And that's the dichotomy that story goes with. So Alan Moore, in his infinite wizard wisdom, decided that the dude that's the lone wolf, the dude that does not want to go with the government, the dude that disobeys literally everyone, that's the fascist. I'm pausing because I need that to sink in. I need that to sink in with people. Alan Moore. And it's unironically most leftists, you are the lone wolf. You are the person that just wants to be left alone. You're the person that just wants to do things your own way. You're the fascist. Because you won't go with the group, you're the fascist. And that's Alan Moore. Now, Alan Moore is what you might call politically, he is what you might call a syndicalist. I've heard him say in interviews, he is an anarcho-syndicalist. And the good people out there might be wondering, what exactly is a syndicalist? A syndicalist, for lack of a better term, and I'm going to get the the actual definition here, and I'm going to explain what it actually means, because they try to clean it up a little bit. Syndicalism, a movement for transferring the ownership and control of the means of production, Marxism, it's Marxism, ladies and gentlemen, and distribution to workers' unions, influenced by Proudhon and French philosopher. Nothing good came from France, so we're not going to give his name any credit. Syndicalism, blah, 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 blah. So here's the interesting thing, folks. Syndicalism means transferring it to the workers' unions. Here's the funny thing about syndicalism. Whenever syndicalism has been put into place, it's always put into place somewhere where the workers' unions end up getting absorbed and nationalized by the state. Numerous groups did this. The communists did this. The fascists did this. And the national socialists, the Nazis, all did this. They all nationalized the trade unions. So when people say like, oh, people have this misinterpretation of history where they say like Hitler smashed the trade unions. It's like, no, he nationalized them. The unions still existed. He nationalized them, and the unions ran these companies. Basically, it's a form of corporatism. It's the same thing. Now you add the anarcho tag to that. What does that mean? It means you do whatever you want. So you take anarchism, which is supposed to be the ultimate individualism, and you combine it with collectivism, and what do you get? When you combine anarchy with collectivism, you get autism. That's what Alan Moore is. He's an autistic retard that doesn't know what he's talking about. Because to call Batman a fascist because he does things his own way blows my mind. And I've understood the argument that some people make. It's like, well, he's just judge, jury, you know, whatever. He decides who does right and who does wrong. It's like, look, I've never seen Batman beat up somebody for dealing on a street corner. I've read a lot of Batman books. Unless somebody's dealing a drug that is going to make your heart explode like a water balloon the first time you take it.
Yeah, he don't care much. In the history of Batman, I cannot name one issue where he was after a pot dealer.
I was going to say, I've never seen him like roll up with the Batmobile on Smokey Joe on the street corner and just start wailing.
He left Cheech and Chong plenty alone. I mean, different coast, but you know.
Same thing. And the fact that he's doing things on his own. Let's look at where Frank Miller gets this inspiration. Where does the one-man army of Batman come from? History lesson, children. Batman was born in the 1930s. V, short history lesson here. What was going on in the United States in the 1930s?
Now, I don't know, looks at arm. I can't quite put my finger on it.
It's almost like there was a depression. A depression that was caused by the U.S. government. Stop me if you've heard this before as we continue through our own version of the Roaring Twenties. So, the government causes a depression, which it did. People can blame corporations, the stock market, whatever. It was the government. FDR steps in as the economy starts to recover, brings in the New Deal, and extends the depression another half a decade because, of course, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Batman is born in 1939 out of this idea that the government doesn't help. The government is a sluggish, corrupt, useless entity, and it is up to the individuals to keep their homes and towns and cities safe because the government won't do it for you.
Hang on a second, Adrian, because I think I'm remembering something, but my timeline might be off. Wasn't that also the kind of the rise of the mob kind of thing?
Like, so the mob was big in the 20s out of Prohibition.
Yeah, but also, like, one of the things with the mob, and again, please correct me if I'm wrong here.
Well, they had bought off a lot of cops, if that's where you're going.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. But also, like, they were trying to present themselves as this alternative to the government. Like, you have to be a criminal.
Yes.
And it kind of like, goes back to your point of, like, individualism, where Batman didn't sink to that level. Like, you couldn't trust the government, but at the same time, he wasn't a criminal.
Yeah, he was a vigilante. Now, you could say that vigilantism is illegal, but, you know, I'm not even going to entertain that debate. Yeah. But my point is that it's born out of this very American idea of almost bringing small town America to the city. And that's kind of what Batman was, where it's like people take care of their own, right? If the cops won't do the job, then how do you hold the police accountable? Well, the people hold the police accountable. And sometimes that means getting in the cop's way because they're doing the wrong thing. And that's what you see with Batman. That's why the cops, by and large, still to this day, a running thing with Batman is that the police, by and large, don't like Batman other than like Gordon and Bullock and a handful of people that are actually decent cops.
And that's the statement there that not all cops are terrible. You know what I mean?
Where exactly.
You have this handful that you can trust that do it for the right reason.
Yeah, you have the people that are there because they're trying to uphold the principles of the thing, and then you have the people that are there on a power trip. And you see that dichotomy. The same way that Batman, in a lot of ways, you could say, oh, well, isn't he on a power trip? And, it, you know, maybe.
But does
Batman really work alone? Because he has his own moral compass. He has Alfred. It's one of the reasons why, over time, especially at least by the 80s, you had the development of, you know, Dick Grayson, Jason Todd characters that helped kind of keep his moral compass straight. So it's not like he's a man on an island just doing everything on his own.
Because that even led into the Justice League stuff where he's meeting other heroes where it's like, okay, he may not trust them completely, but at the same time, it's people he will work with.
So going back to Alan Moore for a second, he goes briefly, I'm not going to read the entire article. He goes briefly into where his quote unquote self-professed here, quote unquote, liberal values come from. And he's talking about growing up poor. And it's like, I always love that when people say they grow up poor and that's why they're liberal. And it's like, yeah, I did too.
Yeah, that didn't.
So,
I mean, I guess you could argue that made me liberal, but I'm a different kind of liberal than the shit out there right now.
And what's interesting is that Frank Miller is more of a self-professed libertarian. Not too hard to understand why he portrays Batman the way he does, because he really overemphasizes that libertarian sort of characteristic, right? Again, as soon as Batman stops doing Batman things and Gordon retires from the police force, what happens? It's back to the bureaucratic, sluggish, corrupt beast that inner cities tend to be. And here's the quote. He's talking about Frank Miller. He has a pretty sub-fascist vision, even from the days of the Dark Knight. It's the idea of one man, perhaps on horseback, who can sort out this mess. That's a bit too Birth of a Nation. I love when people just say things as if that's just supposed to make sense. Now, what he's alluding to is the fact that there's a scene in this, Birth of a Nation is a racist movie, right? And it's about the Ku Klux Klan and everything like that. And that's what he's alluding to, is these dudes on horseback. And it's like, oh, we're gonna clean this up. And it's like, so the fact that he rode on horseback, that's what you're getting out of that. Never mind between 1915, 16, when the Birth of a Nation was made, and 1986 or 87 when The Dark Knight Returns came out, you have literally the entirety of the Western movie boom. And what is a big theme in Westerns? Well, A, horses, obviously.
It might be a cowboy.
But B, what are these cowboys? They are regular people that step into sheriff's roles to clean up the town. Basically, sanctioned vigilantes in a lot of ways, right? Yeah. Like if you watch Tombstone, or you know, you watch any of the Wyatt Earp, like the Kevin Costner Wyatt Earp movie, or if you watch A Fistful of Dollars, Pale Rider, it doesn't matter. Any number of Western
series. My grandmama, she loved those Westerns, man.
I'm a huge Western fanatic, but I find it very interesting that Alan Moore, an Englishman, by the way, so I really don't think we should be taking his opinion on anything too seriously, but his illusion is Batman's on horseback, therefore Birth of a Nation. Whereas as an American, I see Batman on horseback, I'm like, this is a cowboy illusion.
Yeah, it's just fun. Go fucking figure.
Yeah, and then he literally...
The liberals don't like fun.
He doesn't even mention the fact, right? Like, he brings that up, but he doesn't even mention the fact that Batman in the Dark Knight Returns stands up to Superman, stands up to the U.S. government, stands up to every authoritarian entity that there is existing in that universe at that time, and tells them all to basically fuck off. Like, he has that great scene against Superman where he literally goes, I want every, you know, he's like beating the shit out of Superman. He's like, I want you to know, I want them to know, I want everyone to know that I'm the one who beat you. Oh, they actually have it right here. Here it is. I want you to remember, Clark, in all the years to come, in your most private moments, I want you to remember my hand at your throat. I want you to remember I'm the one who beat you. Boom. He says that to a god.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very birth of an it. Very KKK. I'm getting KKK vibes. Like, come on, man.
KKK was all about, doesn't matter your situation, you can rise up. That sounds like the KKK to me.
But I'm not gonna beat the dead horse on it, but just to bring it full circle, just to remind everyone, don't take Gandalf's opinion too seriously on things. Remember, he thought Rorschach was the villain, and that Dr. Manhattan and, you know, fucking Owlman or whatever the hell else their name were.
I've got to object. You can't insult my boy Gandalf like that no more.
If you look at Alan Moore, he is such a dried up looking nutsack. He is like a dehydrated Gandalf.
Word. That's got to be the name. Dehydrated
Gandalf. Alan Moore is a dehydrated nutsack of Gandalf. Like, that's what he looks like. But he thought he wanted Rorschach. He thought everybody would look at Rorschach like the villain. And to this day, he thinks it just shows that people are sadistic because they think Rorschach is the hero. And it's like, yes, the guy that stands up against authoritarians, never mind the fact that he's psychotic, but the guy that stands up against authoritarians is the one that people like. And you're standing there stroking your weird wizard beard with your 15 fucking rings, wondering why. I can tell you why. Because he's an authoritarian. Most people aren't. And that's why he can't wrap his head around it. Plus, he's a leftist and he probably drinks paint. And I could throw any number of other insults in there, but you guys get the point. So, Alan Moore, please do us all a favor and just stop talking, because you're not that good a writer. Nobody really cares what you have to say. Frankly, the only thing approaching decent he's ever done is V for Vendetta. And that's not exactly anything, dare I say, revolutionary. It's basically just taking 1984 and turning it into an action story almost.
That was really good, like, breakdown of that movie, because that's exactly what it is.
That's all it is. It's nothing inspiring. The movie is just shot really well. The comic is insufferable. Like, as bad as the Watchmen, as bad as
the comic.
Yeah, and as bad as the Watchmen movie is that Scott Snyder did, reading the comic is even worse. The comic is actually worse. So, congratulations, Scott Snyder. You actually made a decent comic book movie out of a shitty comic, even though your movie still sucks and is basically a softcore porno. But it's Scott Snyder, so of course he's got to turn everything into a softcore porno. He took a graphic novel about Spartans and had like a 25-minute sex scene, it feels like. So anyway, that's all we got on this one. You guys take it easy. The end.